Okay, I'm Sarah Reith with KZYX. It's November 13th, and we're at the Ukiah Conference Center. Can you introduce yourself?
I'm Corey Waller. I'm a principal with Health Management Associates.
And what is Health Management Associates?
It's a consulting company that's really focused on Medicaid population and the government-funded insurances. And ultimately, we've been around for over 30 years, really developed by people who worked in the Medicaid field, but now have really branched out into Medicare. And more germane to this conversation is that, you know, one of the big focuses that we have is really leaning into building the systems of care around addiction treatment, whether it be funded through Medicaid, Medicare, or all of the above.
And one of the things that you brought up, this is a great segue, is that you've got medical training, and you were initially an emergency room doctor, but then you moved into addiction medicine, and what happened to your paycheck?
Well, it was interesting. So my paycheck immediately got cut by 30%. It went from a Friday when I'm seeing patients in the emergency department, now being dual board certified on Monday, and getting 30% less income.
And that's one of the keys to the system that you're hoping to build to treat addiction. What's it going to take to build an appropriate system to treat this incredibly complicated and pervasive disorder?
Well, I think we have to start thinking about how we, you know, ultimately reimburse in the entirety of the system. It's not just a matter of does somebody's paycheck go up or down. It's just that the systems need to be in place to support the treatment of addiction. And part of that is a paycheck so that I can actually talk a medical student into going to residency and then doing a fellowship in addiction medicine, knowing that it's going to put them in a position where they're going to have to take a pretty substantial pay cut, which means harder to pay off student loans and things like that. Or we just right-size the payment models around addiction, and not just for doctors, but for PAs and nurse practitioners and social workers and peers and case managers, all the team members that it really takes to do it. The federal government started in 2008 by passing a law helping with parity. And so what we've identified is that if we just paid addiction just like we would pay for any other medical care, then there would be no issue with this.
And one of the other things that you pointed out was that some of these treatment programs do art therapy, some do equine therapy. What is known about the type of treatment that works?
Well, the treatments vary based on which substance or behavior someone has an addiction to. But the general concepts of the behaviors that have to be applied is, you know, the behavioral therapies that need to be applied are that they increase the dopamine response. So they need to be something that helps someone express themselves in an emotional way. And what we have data for now is that there are some forms of art therapy that have been very helpful. There are cognitive behavioral therapies that have worked, motivational enhancement therapies. We know that for those that can naturally produce dopamine, that exercise therapies can be helpful. But again, it's very dependent on what the patient is desiring at that time and what they have the capacity and capability to really do. And that's where our focus has to be, is individualized care, applying the best evidence that we have.
And what about the medically assisted treatments? What's the effectiveness of those, and what are the drugs involved?
Well, for opioid use disorder and alcohol use disorder, we have medications that significantly decrease the craving for that drug, as well as decrease the chances of relapse. And specifically for opioid use disorder, if you start someone on medication-assisted treatment, and the data we have for those is with methadone and buprenorphine, not quite as much for naltrexone, but for methadone and buprenorphine, we decrease their risk of death by 60%. In some populations, and even higher, up to 74% decrease in risk of death in the populations just released from jail or prison.
And can you address a little bit of a trust gap? I know that you were talking about the social attitudes about having to be on medications and people just feeling like, oh, I don't really feel like I want to take this drug that is probably going to save my life. But what about the trust gap among people who would say, well, a lot of this opioid crisis happened because doctors were telling them that it wasn't addictive and that it was medically the right decision? How can people be sure that these drugs to treat the substance abuse disorder are not just another round of enriching drug companies?
Yeah, and that's a great question. And this is an area that we've really focused on, those of us who work in addiction treatment, to make sure that we're not just pushing for another round of badness that we're going to have to fix later. And I don't expect people to right out of the gates, quite honestly, to trust the medical profession after this. I think we have to earn that back, and I think the way that we do it is by using data, science, and math, and a very individual, human-focused approach where we're making collaborative decisions rather than me telling someone what to do. I give them the data that we have. I talk about what I think is best for them based on the information, but then we together make that decision. And the only way that we're going to move forward from that trust is for people to understand that for those of us in this business, whether or not I have any input from pharma or that, and I have zero, I never have. And those of us who are building these systems have made clear that we're building the system to decrease the rate of death, improve outcomes. And I could care less if pharma makes a cent.
And what's it going to take to build this system that's going to be effective and comparable to the system for treating, say, cardiology or diabetes?
Well, the good news is we have a lot of other systems to look at that have been really good. So the cardiology system is one I look back on because we've gotten really good at treating patients with heart disease and those with an acute heart attack, to the point where if somebody shows up to an emergency department, we know exactly what to do, no matter where that emergency department is. For addiction, we have to put in the same pieces of the puzzle. And that means we have to have outpatient treatment, we have to have intensive outpatient treatment, we need to be able to have residential treatment. We need to really be able to think through what portions of the system for addiction are missing as compared to standard healthcare. And my answer is most. But the good news is we have money. Right now, we have billions of dollars coming down from the federal government to the states to be dispersed throughout the population so that we can build these systems of care. And those systems of care have to be aligned with what the data says. And the good news is we have the data. So we know exactly what these systems should look like.
So there are a lot of providers in the room today, a lot of people who are just raring to go to help out people who are suffering from addiction. What's their next step to get help from you or from somebody who can give them what they need to get this infrastructure going?
So we're here off of a grant from the Department of Healthcare Services and really overseen by Marlies Perez, who's running this from the state side. And our job is to go to the county, pull together all the people who see patients with addiction on a regular basis, identify the current state, and then come together to define what we want the future state to look like. And then this grant allows us to give a year's worth of technical assistance to provide that help to fill that gap between the current state and the future state that we want. So the faster we get started, the more people we get in the mix, the better this is going to be. And I think the biggest gap is not necessarily the technical aspects or the business aspects. It's the hearts and minds piece where people are letting belief get in front of the science and not really understanding that you can have both. You can utilize a belief system to apply the evidence-based medicine, and we can do this together as a community so that people get the right treatment that they need to decrease the chances of somebody's son, daughter, brother, sister from dying.
What's an example of technical assistance? Is that like learning how to use a website or what does that mean?
Well, the technical assistance goes everything from implementation of all the billing structures that you would need, the documentation structures, electronic health records, to medical stuff of, you know, what dose and which med and how do you evaluate toxicology studies, to the behavioral therapeutics of which therapy should be delivered at what time and how do you build that in and bill for it. So it is every aspect of the system, you know, how do you use data? You know, all of these are a part of the technical assistance. So whatever the people in the communities that we're working in need, we find the expert to help them fill that gap.
So are there people who are treating addiction right somewhere in the world, and can we use their data?
Yeah, so the interesting piece is we have a number of bright spots in the United States who have done a good job at their individual approaches to care. There are no communities that have the whole enchilada, though. We have a bunch of individual people that have done a great job at the methadone clinic level or at the intensive outpatient treatment level or residential treatment. But what we're trying to do right now is to take all of those individual best practices and put them together into an ecosystem of care so that people know that if they show up and ask for help, that we have the right sized system to get them that help.
And what changed to make this on the radar as something that needs to be treated so systematically?
Well, there's a cynical answer and then there's a data-driven answer. And so the cynical answer is white people started dying. Kids of politicians started dying and it became on the radar. I mean, if we were to be really honest. Once it did, we started digging into the entirety of the system and recognized that this is not sustainable from an economic standpoint, from an emotional standpoint, or from a data science standpoint. And so we, as people who treat addiction, have really pushed forward, but also politicians and elected officials, and even at the community level, have really started to coalesce on what we need to get done to make this happen.
Is there anything that you'd like to add?
This doesn't happen unless the community is on board. And so if you don't, if this doesn't feel right to you, if this is frustrating for you, if you think that there's a different or better way, now is the time to stand up and have that conversation. Don't sabotage the system. Be a part of it.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time.
Oh, you're quite welcome.